Well, good morning. Good evening. It's evening, isn't it? What is it?
Good evening.
First time I've been here today, so it's like my morning. We are glad that all of you are here. We have a visitor or two here tonight, and we're glad that you're here especially. And we want you to come back any opportunity that you might have to be with us. We've been away this weekend and had some time together with a few more of the young couples. I thought about saying that and then saying, and Robert and Diane, but I wanted them to feel young too. And our trainers, there we go. And we've had the opportunity to grow together, and we are glad for it. We're glad to be back. Everything was time well spent, travel well handled, and everyone had a good and safe trip back. So we're glad for that. In 1972, there was a guy who got to thinking about the way things have always been done. And he thought, there's got to be a better way. And so he began to look at, based on his knowledge and his experience and where all he's been and things that he saw, he said, there's got to be a better way of doing this. So he, in 1974, decided he would make known public, after 2 years of research, this idea and these thoughts that he had. And this idea that he had was to use the reserve air that was left in the lungs to dislodge a foreign object from the throat. Now, we all call that the Heimlich maneuver. And in 1974, Dr. Henry Heimlich authored and penned for the first time the idea about how we're going to dislodge this obstruction from the airway. Prior to his thinkings and his research, and wouldn't you hate to be on the part that gets the receiving end of the research? We need you to swallow this, get choked, and let's see if this works. And so that wasn't going to be real fun. But prior to that, it was the habit of the Red Cross to do either one of two things. Either we're going to slap you on the back, or we're going to, I think they call it the scoop and sweep, where they would stick your finger in and try to retrieve the object. And he said, based on everything he knew, those are two of the worst things you could do. So let's try to use the leftover air that is in the lungs, and let's dislodge that by using the diaphragm to do it. And so today, in nearly every first aid class you were to ever go to of any kind, they're going to teach you that, and they're going to teach you that on a variety of subjects, along with, you know, CPR. And so they're going to teach you this on a grown adult. They're going to teach you this on a young child. They're going to show you how to do this because choking is an issue. And so, if you've ever been around anyone that is choking, or you've ever seen anyone choke, or even worse, if you have been the one who is choking, this is an experience that is unlike really any other. The inability to catch your breath is horrible. When you're grasping for air and you can't get anything in, or you're just watching someone where that's occurring. And you feel kind of helpless in the moment of watching someone go through that. And you yourself, if you're going through that, helpless is not even on the radar because you're in the state of shock, worry, and panic of how am I'm about to die. The realization of death is right there in your face. And so you're hoping that someone can help you in this time of need. And so, yes, there is, you can find stuff of how to give yourself the Heimlich maneuver and use a chair and all this other stuff. This is not a demonstration about how to save your life in this regard. We're worried about saving your soul. So this is the defense against choking in a spiritual matter. How do you keep yourself from spiritually choking? And the choking we think about is, you know, that idea of, I've got something in my throat, I've got it hung on a chicken bone. But this idea of choking also goes into, for guys, the more prevalent thing is when you think about choking, you think about failure in a sports scenario. Okay? You think about this right here. This is intense pressure. And now it's the inability to come through when you really need to. So we think about that in basketball, and here's this person. They're on the free throw line, and they're shooting the game-winning shot. It's tied up. There's no time left on the clock, and all they have to do is make a free throw. And then they doink it off the front of the rim, or they airball it, and everyone says what? They choked. They choked under pressure. They may say it in football. It's that, you know, there's 1 second left on the clock. And then you line up to kick this field goal here, and you've got a chance to win the game. And nobody likes that 1 second. You just kneel it. Don't take that last second field goal. Here's the guy. He's going to kick this field goal. Is he going to kick it and it's going to be good? Well, he did great. And if he misses, he choked. You've got it in baseball where it's the bottom of the ninth. It's a full count, bases loaded, and you're in the batter's box. And just to help you out, if you're ever in that situation, don't worry about it, because the pitcher's got to hit a 17-inch wide strike zone, and it's only about 2.5 feet tall. More pressure's on them than it's on you. So anyhow, but you have this situation here. Are they going to come through with a hit, or are they going to choke? When the pressure is on us, spiritually speaking, and we are grasping for air, and we feel this weight and this pressure and this burden in this moment, are we going to choke, or are we going to survive? Are we going to live? A rise in pressure every time is going to increase the likelihood of choking that leads to destruction. Now, when this pressure is on, I want you to think about Peter for a moment. And we're going to look at what Peter has to say. We'll be spending the majority of our text this evening will come from 1 Peter. And we're going to learn what Peter has to say about choking. And you may think, well, that's kind of ironic. If we're going to look at somebody that has success at not choking, Peter's probably not the one to look at, because Peter choked when it was time. When he was under pressure, he was one of the ones who choked. What steps must we do and we must take to prevent choking spiritually? So, a defense against choking. We need to keep alert. We have to always be on guard. We have to be looking at any and every opportunity to where we may go into a point where we are choking. If we think about this with our children and the way we do things, when we think about the way that they eat stuff, we slice things up for our kids so it's more easy for them to eat and them to chew and them to swallow. And we cut them in such a way to where they're less likely to get lodged in the airway. And so we do those things in order that we may not have to go into the choking scenario. So we're alert. We try to stay awake and we look at these things. We look at these situations maybe to even prevent there being an opportunity to get choked. If we're going to go back to the sports thing, how about you just blow the other team out so you don't have to worry about making that last second shot and you just avoid the choking idea altogether. But carelessness and inattentiveness oftentimes is what leads to choking. When you just get flipping in your ways and you just kind of are like, well, you know, I've done this 100 times. It's not really, doesn't really matter. And you just start getting lazy on everything. That's when oftentimes we begin to have opportunities to choke. Maybe you get in a hurry. Maybe you feel that pressure and you rush in things. And then you think about the times maybe you got something high hung is because you was in a hurry trying to eat real fast. And you didn't take the time to actually chew your food up. Every now and then, my grandfather would take us fishing. And every now and then pretty much means anytime we said we wanted to go, he took us. And so we would go fishing. And then the best days was when he had enough time at the end of the day. And he would just say, hey, let's just go ahead and eat these things while we got them. So we would cook it and we'd have all that. He'd get that pot boiling down in the basement and he'd start frying up them catfish. Boy, it was good. And put some hush puppies in there. And then we'd run upstairs real quick while they were still hot and we would eat. And we would go through and we'd eat that catfish. And then you'd see like there was only one left on top of that, you know, the paper towels sitting on top of that paper plate in the middle of the table. And so there was only one left. And so what you did was you hurry up and cleaned your plate off because you couldn't get any more until you cleaned your plate. So you just that big old bite of all them bones and everything, and then you'd grab it. Oh, my plate was clean, so I'd try to grab that plate, and then you begin to choke because you got careless. You got in a hurry. You got to where you were rushing through everything. You didn't pay attention to what you was doing. But when you take your time and you focus and you're alert, things work out a lot better. Next time you're at Catfish Cabin, you get one of them whole fish fillets and you sit down to eat right there. Put a blindfold on. Does that make any sense? No, that don't make any sense. Why? There's something in there that might choke me, right? Well, you can poke around with your teeth and try to clean it out the best you can, but still, that don't make good sense. Are we going to fumble around and go through life poking around in the dark? Carelessly, aimlessly, not paying attention to what we're doing? No, we're going to keep alert. We're going to pay attention to what we're doing. In 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8, it says, "Be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour." The verses preceding that say this, "Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time He may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on Him, because He cares for you." Now this is something that I believe that Peter forgot. But he then needed to remind everyone to be sober-minded, to be watchful, to be alert. Peter forgot to be watchful three different times. Three times he forgot and did what he said he would never do. Three times he denied Christ and he choked. Yet here is Peter learning from his mistake and continually, I would say every day, reminding and being reminded of his moment where he choked. Because failure oftentimes, if we will let it, if we will humble ourselves, it will change us and make us a better person. It will help us to be a better child of God. Because we will take those moments of failure, we will look at them, we will analyze them, we will say, this is where I messed up, and these are the things that I've got to do better next time. And so I can just imagine if I was in Peter's shoes, that every day that I woke up, and not narrow one time did I ever hear a rooster crow ever again, and I didn't think about that morning where I denied Christ. Every morning, that every time that he heard a rooster crow, if it was just a crazy rooster and he was just walking down the road in the middle of the day and he heard a rooster crow, could you just imagine? Just like, I'll never forget. We have things like that in our life where that just are a reminder. Well, I'll never forget that time where I did that and I learned a very valuable lesson. In 2008, Ole Miss beat Florida 31-30. And Tim Tebow gave one of what I genuinely think is probably one of the greatest motivational speeches in just a one-minute time frame that could ever be given. And this is the sum of it. "You will never see anyone work harder than me. You will never see any more devoted than I'm going to be devoted the rest of my career here at Florida. And I'm going to hold the rest of my team accountable for their actions while we are here at Florida." Because he let that loss, that failure, motivate him to never be in that situation ever again, to where he was going to be close to failure. He was going to be sober-minded and watchful in all things that they did so that they could have success. If we were going to approach it in the same way, that we are going to be sober-minded, we're going to be watchful, we're going to look out for that creeping around, silent in the grass, lion. And he roars because he can't help himself from roaring when he attacks. Because he's excited and he knows he's got you. And he's trying to devour you. And we're always looking out for that. When we get to that point, We get to that point because we've humbled ourselves. We've casted all our cares upon Christ. We're not overburdened because we let Him handle it. We've released it to Him. And keeping alert, back in 1 Peter chapter 1, 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 13 says, therefore, preparing your minds for action and being sober-minded, set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And this idea of being sober-minded, if we go back to chapter 5 and verse 8, he says, be sober-minded, be watchful. And I believe accurately, you know, being sober-minded is this idea of, well, you're not drunk. You're not of clouded mind. Well, that would be 100% accurate. But if you were, you can be inattentive, you can be unalert and uncaring and be sober. So this idea of being sober-minded carries so much more into just the fact of, I'm not drunk and I'm not high, but I am on guard. I have prepared my mind for action. I have set my hope fully upon the grace that will be bringing me the revelation of Jesus Christ. I am looking for these things. Jumping ahead to verse 23, he says, having been born again, not of corruptible seed, but of incorruptible through the Word of God, which lives and abides forever. You have been born again. You are a child of God, so we should be living like a child of God. In verse 14, he said, as obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lust as in your ignorance, but as He who called you is holy, you also be holy in your conduct. And the Lord has said, be holy, for I am holy. When we approach the idea of I'm going to be holy like God is holy, and I'm going to be watchful for anything that's going to try to make me unholy, and I'm going to be on guard for anything that's going to try to dirty me up or to get me sidetracked or to get my guard down, then I will be ready. I'm going to be ready for that roaring lion. I'm going to be ready for that moment to where I will be ready under pressure. Prepare your mind so that when difficulties come, you will be ready. This is not like an, you know, if this ever happens situation. This is a when this happens situation. You go through this whole process of learning that first aid, of learning the Heimlich maneuver. Do you do it this way? Do you go, well, you know, we're going to go eat tonight, and then there's somebody that you know, they got hung on a chicken bone, and they're over there, and they've got that international symbol for I can't breathe, and you go, you know, there's something for that. Let me Google it right quick. You just hang right there. It will be right with you. Okay. Stand the person up. All right. Can you stand? And are you going to go through that process? Or do you go through the process knowing that, unfortunately, sometime I may actually have to use this? And so beforehand, you set yourself up to prepare yourself for that moment that you will be able to do it. Well, you do all that beforehand. You learn that beforehand. You learn that first aid. You prepare. You get ready before it ever happens so that you can be ready. Prepare your mind for action. We need to prepare ourselves for the moment. In 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 7, the end of all things is at hand. Therefore, be self-controlled and sober-minded for the sake of your prayers. The end is at hand. Well, what does that mean? Peter is talking about that it's right here, right now. This is when it's all going down. Peter knew about the Roman Empire. And he knew the way things were going to unfold. That when a new emperor was to take the throne, they didn't just think of themselves like, I am king of the world. They literally thought of themselves as God. I am the ruler and owner of all things. This is my empire. This is my place to do what I will, when I will. I'll get what I want, when I want. And if that was, and in this moment, to get rid of the Christians would need to be prepared for that. The end of all things is at hand. Therefore, be self-controlled and sober-minded for the sake of your prayers. Peter is trying to warn them that the time is coming where you are going to be pressured? Are you going to choke or are you going to survive? Do not be blind. Be paying attention for the sake of your prayers. It reminded me about watch and pray. We sing the song, watch and pray, watch and pray, watch and pray every day. And over in Matthew chapter 26, there was a moment in which Jesus was trying to prepare Peter. And here is Peter, all these years afterwards, trying to tell the kingdom of God kind of the same thing that he was being told here by Jesus. In Matthew chapter 26, verses 40 and 41, it says, "And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping." Remember, they were in the garden. They had been there times before. And he had told them, "Just y'all sit over here while I go over there and pray. Sit over here while I go over here and pray." And he says, he comes back and he finds them sleeping. He said to Peter, "So could you not watch with me 1 hour?" "No, all I ask you to do is watch and pray. And you couldn't even watch 1 hour. Watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." Jesus is telling Peter, he said, you've got to be on guard. My hour is at hand. My time is coming. And like Brother Vernon talked about this morning before the Lord's Supper, about that time. And he knew his time had come. This is the moment. And so he's telling Peter here specifically, could you not just watch him? Watch just 1 hour. We think about what they called the periods of night. They called it the first watch, the second watch, and the third watch, the fourth watch right before dawn. And it was this idea of you're watching out. You're watching for the things that could be happening in your own guard. And here is Jesus telling Peter, just watch and pray. Watchfulness and prayer is how we should approach being alert. If we're going to defend against choking, we have got to be alert, and watching out while we pray is the best way and is the utmost way for us to do that. Well, how am I going to watch out while I pray? Because when I pray, I close my eyes. And I remember thinking that when I was a little boy. I thought, well, how in the world does that work? Well, do I do it with one eye open and one eye closed? How do I approach this? Then finally, after having that in the back of my mind, I finally heard somebody tell me and explain that in such a way that it would just, duh. What are you watching for? Are you literally watching for somebody to stab you in the back? Are you looking for somebody to place you under arrest here like it is in Jesus' situation? Can we see what is lurking like a lion, seeking whom he may devour? You can watch for Satan. You can watch for evil spirits just as well with your eyes open as you can with your eyes closed. And it's about being in prayer and talking to the one that can help you in those moments that is showing your watchfulness. And Father, help me see temptation before I sin. Help me to realize and to be alert that when I'm awake and walking about, that there's things and events that go on that I need to avoid. We've got to be tuned into the fact that the devil desires to enter in and he wants to make us choke. And he wants us to fail under pressure. Keeping alert requires us to be active, not passive. Active involvement in the Lord's work is one way that we can be active in this and keeping alert. When we are busy spreading the gospel, we're always watching because we're always in battle. You're always talking to someone that is not a believer or doesn't believe the way you believe, or maybe they don't even believe that there's God. And when you're constantly in and out of conversations like that throughout the day, then you're actively involving this idea that, hey, there is an enemy out there. It becomes a realization to you that this is a battle. But when we have our blinders on and we're in our own little world and we don't realize how evil Satan really is and how much he's really kind of twisted the world, we're just kind of like, well, isn't everybody just kind of good folks like us? No. Far, far from it. We've got to be active in this. We can't just be like, well, just whatever. We've got to be on guard and be ready. Active watchfulness and prayer. We constantly realize that we need help and can receive help through prayer. Many times we don't realize how big of an impact God had in a moment until we are through the moment and we can reflect on the moment. There are some times that I've walked away from questions in class or questions just walking about out in the world or having made a comment to somebody, and I'll go away from the situation after it's over. It's typically when you go away anyhow, but as you go away from it and you think about everything you said and they said, and I'll think, man, how in the world did I come up with that? Not to pat myself on the back or anything, but That was really good comment, Matt. And you have no idea how in the world you came up with that in that moment. And all I can think about is like, there goes God again. There he goes again. Because there's no way little old Matt from Podunk could have sat down and ever thought about something like that good. But you don't ever realize that in the moment. After the moment, you think about, well, God did, he pulled out a pretty good one right there. Or he really got me out of this bind that I was in over here. He really saved me from choking by taking me out of that situation. And we always turn to him through prayer, and he will always come through and help us. Now, we may be, waiting on a yacht to come by and save us on an island, and he may send a canoe. And that may be your avenue of help. And he's like, well, I was really expecting a yacht. Y'all just go on ahead. God will always come through and help. And it's in his way and not necessarily our way. Active surrender of our anxieties to Christ. When we really give him control and we allow him to use us the way that he wants to use us, that he is, that we become like that clay in the potter's hand, that he makes us and molds us into what we need to be. And we've given him control of everything. Then he begins to solve the problems. And we, because in doing that, we've given up the idea that I got to be in control all the time. Because I've said, I'll be at your mercy. You be in control. And I need some help. And Peter is constantly trying to prepare those that he was writing to about this. The end is going to come. And it's not going to be easy. And we've got to stand ready. Our Heimlich maneuver for not choking spiritually is by constantly maintaining a Christian active lifestyle, by being an active part of the church. When we become careless or flippant in whatever way that we are living a godly life, we begin to choke. We begin to grasp for air. We begin to doubt. We begin to worry. All because we haven't done things God's way. We've got to always be paying attention. And one thing that I always try to tell, especially the the T-ballers that the kids get on the team with. It don't cost you anything to pay attention. And they go, what? And I went, man, maybe one day they'll understand. But when we really sit down and we focus and we pay attention, and we focus and we set our goal and our aim, and we're saying, we're going to serve God. I'm going to be holy as God is holy. Everything else is just going to be, oh, that ain't part of getting me there. I'm not going to have anything to do with it. And we want to bring as many people into that way of life as we can, and we have to be focused on doing God's work. If you're here this evening and you feel as though you have spiritually been choking and you can't catch your breath, we have a solution that's found in the blood of Jesus Christ that can wash you and cleanse you and make you white as snow, and there's no better way for your soul to be saved. We're going to face moments in our lives to where the pressure is going to be on, and we're going to have to look around and we're going to have to lean on our brothers and sisters in Christ. We're going to have to look to God to take that worry and that stress away, or we are going to spiritually choke and we're going to fail. And perhaps you have failed. I don't know what we can do for you this evening to help you, but we would love to help you in any manner that we can. I don't know if you will leave here and you will be renewed and redeemed like Peter was, and then you live your life every time you hear a rooster crow, it reminds you of what you were, and you're never going to go back there. And that's what we would love to help you do. And if we need to pray with you and pray for you, we're here for that as well. And we would invite you to come as we stand and as we sing.